Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk leader.
Well, good morning, everybody. It's 9:09 on KDXU. I'm Andy. I'll be here today and tomorrow, taking Christmas and actually the rest of the year off after that. Now, it sounds like a long time. It's 4 days, but I'll be back after the new year. So today and tomorrow, and today I have a special guest on the program. His name is Dennis Stilson. Dennis, how are you?
Good. Glad to be here. Thank you.
Good to have you here, man. Now, Dennis is an author. Well, Dennis has done a lot of things. So to say he is an author, it is true, but it's not all that Dennis is. And so we're going to talk a little bit about the book that he wrote and the topic. It's actually a couple of books now and the topics that he spanned. But Dennis, before we talk about your book, and just a hint, it's about a famous murder case in the state of Utah. Let's talk about you a little bit. Tell us where you grew up, where you're from, how'd you end up in St. George?
Oh, that's six questions in one. Let's see.
Pick one and go.
There we go. I was born Spanish Fork, Utah.
Okay, so you're a Don.
I'm a Don.
All right.
I never knew what that meant for years, but I guess I was one. Yeah, born there, went through high school there, and then came down here and right out of high school for the summer. I was offered a scholarship if I would box for a private club.
So you were a boxer, okay.
Yeah, got into that big time all my life growing up from 10 years old. Won the Junior Olympics a couple of years. And,
nice.
Was pretty active. And came down here for the summer, got a job, then got another call and was called to Vegas and offered to go pro boxing. And anyway, thought about that.
This would have been what, mid-70s?
Yep, 75.
Okay. And how long has it been since you were in the ring? I'm guessing at this point it's been 40 or 50 years, huh?
Yeah, a long time. The only ring I've been in would be down at the old folks' home, probably.
Do you have fond memories of boxing? I mean, I've never boxed professionally. Last time I actually boxed anyone was, I remember in middle school. We had one day a week where we boxed, and I remember getting the crap beat out of me by a kid one time, not because he was bigger than me, but because he was so dang fast. I couldn't even see his fist. That's how fast he was hitting. Boop, 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 boop. Anyway, do you have fond memories of your boxing days?
Oh, loved it. Like I said, started young at 10 years old. My dad worked at Geneva, so he'd drive 15 miles to work, get off work, come home, pick me, my friends or cousins up, drive back. The ring or workout gym was right there by Geneva. He'd take us all back over there, and he'd help coach and work out for 2-3 hours and do that 2-3-4 nights a week. And
wow. Well, that's pretty
good,
cool.
Good dad I had. But fought with Danny Lopez, was 4 years older than me. But we traveled together and boxed around the different states. He went on to become the lightweight champion of the world.
Nice.
Little Red, they called him. His older brother was a middleweight champion of the world.
Now, there's a little bit of a boxing heritage here in southern Utah, Gene Fulmer and those guys. And did you box down here ever, or was that kind of below your level at that point?
We never did down here, no. Okay. Mostly up north. I knew Gene and Don Fulmer. Mm-hmm. Talked to them all the time growing up. We fought against their clubs.
Okay. Nice. Now, the other thing that fascinated me, not just this, but one of the other things, was you actually, after your boxing kind of days were over, you were a professional musician.
Yeah, I actually did both growing up. My dad played and sang country music.
Nice.
And so as soon as I was big enough to get my hands around a guitar, he was teaching me.
Mm-hmm.
I started playing in bars. That's the only places there was where right. you got paid to play. But I was playing in the bars at 13 years old with my dad.
And that's amazing. That, do you still play after all these years?
Yeah, I try to a little bit.
Yeah.
Not like I used to, but I always could make a living at it here and there and toured with some pretty big bands and met a lot of very big musicians.
Pretty much country, though, right? Not
well, growing up, but at 14, I started playing with a local rock band.
Oh, okay.
So I was doing both all the time.
And did you sing, too?
Uh-huh, yeah.
Yeah? Like lead singer or harmonies or...
Lead singer, yeah.
Nice.
And harmony, too. But played rhythm, lead, and bass. And
that's incredible, yeah. Now, years ago, I like to tell this story. So my son was a drummer, and his best friend was a guitar player. And they said, you know, we want to form this little trio, but we don't have a bass player. And I said, well, I'm really into music, and I can read music. I'll play bass for you. And so I went out and bought a bass and an amp, thinking, how hard could the bass be, right? I was wrong. I was terrible. And it's funny because they would start going. They start jamming, and I was really struggling just to keep up and everything. And when I started out playing the bass with my thumb, and which, of course, you play the bass with your fingers, not your thumb. And anyway, I finally had – they stopped at one point, and my son's buddy, the guitar player, said – have you ever played bass before? I said, no. He goes, well, just do this. Just do a little rhythm. Boom, boom, boom. You know, and I was like, okay, I'll just... I couldn't. It was bad news.
Well, so. I started on the guitar first, so going to bass was
easier, huh?
Yeah, very easy.
Only four strings instead of six.
And it's fun. Bass is funner to play.
Yeah.
But you just can't do as much, you know. Can't really sing and play bass alone, you know.
Yeah. You ever played the big one, the upright bass, the big one?
I haven't.
No? Yeah, that seems kind of...
I don't know how they're tuned. Yeah. I wonder if they're tuned the same.
I would imagine it's similar, right? Because you have guys that transition back and forth, so...
Do they? Yeah. If it's EAD, I'm sure I could play it.
Yeah, I think so. So... I met a girl this weekend, who plays the harp now. And I said, harp, how many strings does that have? And she goes, well, the one I have is 36. And I'm like, wait a minute, I couldn't play a 4-string bass, and she's playing a 36 string harp. It's incredible. But I did learn a secret, I guess, that in order to orient yourself on the harp, there are certain strings that are a different color. So that if you need to find middle C, it's the red one. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah,
I always wonder how they're tuned and how they play all those strings. That's
how
interesting.
It works. So, okay. Well, what we want to talk about a lot is your book. The book is called Life After Execution, The Gilmore Gun, based on truth, not based on a true story, but based on truth, by Dennis R. Stilson. That's you. I really think it's important, Dennis, that we educate people about the Gilmore murders, because I think, like you were telling me before we went on the air, older people will remember them, and it was a big case, but we start, the details get cloudy, and we start mixing them up with other murder cases and stuff. And then young people, if you're under, say, 50 or 55, you probably don't really remember it at all, or maybe you weren't even alive. So tell me the Gilmore murder story.
Yeah, I find it interesting, first off, that they don't teach this in history.
Yeah.
Because this was world news.
It was. And it was right here in Utah.
And actually there was a high school teacher up until a few years back that taught this case in Orem, Utah. I had people come to me and tell me. Anyway, Gary Gilmore's uncle had a shoe shop, and I knew him all my life growing up. My dad and him were good friends, Vern D'Amico. And we were active in archery all my life growing up with my dad and family.
I love archery,
Vern. And so we'd go to shoots indoors and competition and ranges outdoors during the summer. But anyway, Gary was his nephew. And
so to preface the story here, the U.S. for about a decade had done away with capital punishment, with executing prisoners for murder. It was gone. And so this is one of the reasons this Gilmore case became so huge, because it was right around the time when the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that we're going to let capital punishment come back into the world. So, okay, so now back to the Gary Gilmore story.
Okay, well, as far as the capital punishment, yeah, in 66, there was a couple of years, two, 3 years there, where there were no executions. Then they passed the federal moratorium prohibiting it nationwide.
Right.
Nobody
right.
could execute. And then when Gary got caught, whatever, and did the murders, he said, hey, I'm not going to live my life in prison. I want the death penalty. I don't want to live in prison. So denied all his appeals.
Yeah.
But what he did, Gary, he got in trouble. Like 15 years old, he was running a car theft ring in Oregon.
At 15?
Yeah. So wow. The guy was bad news.
Yeah.
And incarcerated in and out beginning that young. He ended up, he was such a problem case later in life in his 30s. They sent him to the Marion prison, which was a max, hard max, no visitors. Yeah. But Uncle Vern and his two daughters helped get him out of prison, got him on a probation program, gave him a job, a place to live.
A second chance at life, basically, yeah, for Gilmore.
Very rare compared to most criminals.
Right.
Anyway, it was about July or when he did the murders. I think he got there in April when they got him out. But he just, from bar to bar, and then where I grew up playing all these bars, music, I knew the owners of all of them.
Right.
And he was hanging out in all of them in Utah Valley. And
so this guy, and by the way, there was a movie made back in the, was it the 80s they made the movie?
Yeah, 80.
Called Executioner's Song, and maybe you saw that a long time ago. I think it was a made-for-TV movie. Tommy Lee Jones, though, was the star. He played Gary Gilmore.
Yeah, he did. Won his first Emmy in that role. And the book by Norman Mailer won the Pulitzer Prize two years before.
So Gilmore gets out of prison. He's released, not really into custody of his uncle, but under supervision of his uncle. And he had become pen pals with his uncle's daughter. I think her name was Brenda?
Brenda, huh?
Yeah. And so the movie starts out with Brenda picking up Gary from the, basically from the airport and bringing him home. And Tommy Lee Jones did a good job. You could kind of tell from the movie character that Gilmore was a bad customer right from the get-go. Even though it was a happy reunion and everything, you could tell he wasn't quite right.
And he lacked the social skills. It's the thing that I got out of it more than anything.
Yeah.
And you can see why. You know, you're not out in the community, in public. You're raised in an evil, hardcore situation from 15 years old. You know, being abused when he was young in the first, jail or whatever they put the detention or whatever the young one's in, you know.
Yeah.
It's got to mess with your social skills.
So Gary got a job, I think it was an insulation company or something, and was working. And the owner of the company helped him get a car. It was a Ford Mustang, which is kind of cool now, but back then it was just a car. But Gary didn't like the Mustang that much. But what he wanted was a truck. And that kind of, to me, Dennis, that kind of was the start of the end for Gary Gilmore, because he needed money because the car dealer said, no, you know, I'm not going to give you the truck.
You've got it.
And so he needed money to get the truck, and that started him, maybe didn't start him back in a life of crime, but it kind of cemented him into, he went to a place and stole a bunch of guns, and I'll let you pick up the story from there.
Yeah, at that point, he was habitual thief anyway.
Yeah.
I've got all kinds of people that came to me with little stories.
Yeah.
He would walk in, like Swan's Market was one of his favorite stops in Spanish Fork.
Yeah.
And that's where I lived. And a friend of mine, this was son of the owner of the store, and we call it the little Walmart now, because it was a little convenience store, had everything you needed to survive, connected to Gordon Swan's house. And he came in there a few times anyway, like you were saying. He burglarized it 2 or 3 in the morning one night, and they just happened to be out of town to up the Flaming Gorge or somewhere camping. I don't know how they timed that, but it's probably a good thing they were gone.
Yeah, he might have killed them.
They would have walked in on him or stole 11 guns.
Wow. And now, he needed to sell these guns, Dennis, and He wasn't having a lot of good luck doing that. In fact, I remember you wrote about that he presented them to a group of young people that he used to help buy alcohol for, and none of them even wanted to. They didn't want the guns, and they didn't even want to talk about the guns for fear of getting in trouble.
Yeah, one kid was like 14, 15 years old, and he lived, Jeff, my uncle was like three doors down, and two doors down was Gilmore's girlfriend and him were living there.
Yeah.
And they tried to sell him to these teenage kids that I knew, and they were, you know, no, we don't want them. They were afraid. Yeah. Had enough sense not to get involved.
Now, you know, one of the central themes of this book is the Gilmore gun, you call it, and guns in general. And it's interesting nowadays. I mean, obviously, school shootings and things like that happen, sadly, in our society. But back then, guns were everywhere. I mean, you growing up in Spanish Fork, I grew up in Texas. Guns were not a big deal. I mean, they were in the, you know, people had them hanging in the back window, the long rifles, and guns were not a big deal. But
unfortunately, we all had gun racks in. Yeah. We all did.
Yeah, it's true. Mm-hmm. But so he had these guns, and the weird thing, so on the night of the first murder with Gilmore, it didn't seem like he set out to murder somebody. It didn't seem like that he was going to murder somebody. I mean, he was kind of a bad guy, but you didn't feel like he was a psychotic type, you know, murderer. But boy, that first night he killed a guy.
You know, and that another story right before he did that.
Mm-hmm.
The same night, he went over to Swan's Market, and one of the Swan boys, Steve, real nice, easy, soft-spoken guy, was in there working. And Gary, like I said, had frequented this store. This was, early evening, getting dark.
Yeah.
And just before dark, I guess he went in there and got some beer, was sitting out in his truck for an hour or two drinking beer. And Steve had noticed and was kind of keeping an eye, but Steve helped take some groceries out to a lady's car, and he saw him there, and he's, what's the matter? Why, won't your truck start? And Gary kind of stammered and whatever. No, I can't get it started. Will you help me push it? By then it was getting dark, and you drop off a main street down into a kind of a dark neighborhood with a little bit of a grade going down into there, and so Steve, being a nice guy, helped Gary push the truck, but Gary wouldn't pop the clutch to try to get it to engage.
Oh, no.
And it was getting farther off the main street and darker. Finally, Steve said, no, I got to get back to the store, and it's probably a good thing.
Probably saved his life, yeah.
It may have done.
So, and we're coming up on a break here in about 4 or 5 minutes, but so he went out. This was the summer of 1976, right?
July, uh-huh.
And he went to, I think the first one was a gas station, right? And he went and robbed a guy. This was a young BYU law student who was a service station attendant. Back in the days, you know, they actually had service station attendants and not convenience store clerks. But went in, pulled the gun out, told the guy, give me money. He complied. As far as anybody could tell, he complied with every request that Gary Gilmore made of him. Gary Gilmore still made him get down on the ground and shot him to death.
Yeah, took him into the restroom. And
unbelievable.
Taking the money. And
so that one happened, and it was a big deal, but they didn't know who did that one. It seemed like to me. There was a big mystery about it, but Gary, in his warped mind, decided he was going to do it again the very next night. So he took his truck, which he said was having trouble starting. He took his truck into a garage and then went and walked a couple of blocks away and to a hotel lobby.
City Center Motel, right next door to his uncle's home in Chew.
Yeah, so Uncle Vern's house was right there, and his shop was right there. Went into the
broad daylight.
Yeah, went into the hotel lobby. Basically robbed the clerk and then murdered the clerk. And his wife was actually in the back room when all this happened. Yeah. And
he walked back up to the gas service station, while he was gone, they got in his truck and it started right up.
Yeah.
So they knew, what's going on here?
Something weird here.
On the way after he robbed it, he's walking out with the cash box and the gun, and he went to stash the gun in the bushes, and it fired and shot him through the hand.
Shot himself in the hand. So when he went back to get the truck, all of a sudden he had this bloody hand wound. In fact, I think you described him there. He actually left a blood trail in the mechanic shop. And then when they didn't do anything. It was probably really smart. Here's a guy with a gun. Let him leave. He got in his truck and left, and they wrote down their license plate, and that's when they called the police.
And I believe they heard it over the police scanner in the station.
So they knew.
So they knew right then when it was him.
Yeah. Pretty smart of them to not say anything.
Kept the composure.
The state of mind that he was in, who knows what would have happened at that point. So Gary Gilmore committed on consecutive nights murders of two young BYU law students, two returned missionaries, two guys that did nothing wrong. In fact, when he went to rob them, they did everything that he told them to, and yet he still killed them. Unbelievable.
Yeah, sad, sad story.
So we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the aftermath now. Gilmore got arrested. We're going to talk about how that happened. We're going to talk about the gun. We're going to talk about why it was such a landmark case in the United States of America. And we'll also talk about how he died, which is pretty unique to the state of Utah, if you can believe that. It was firing squad. We'll talk about that when we come back. Right now, let's check weather here on the Andy Griffin Show. We're talking with Dennis Stilson. Be right back.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk leader.
Back on the Andy Griffin Show, it's 9:34. Dennis R. Stilson is here. I don't know what does the R stand for? Is that something cool or?
Not too cool. Ray. Pretty common.
Yeah, all right.
Brings in the sun. The sun rays. Keeps you right. There you go. How's that?
Dennis is the author of the latest book. It's called Life After Execution, The Gilmore Gun. And we're talking about the Gary Gilmore murders. So he murdered two people on consecutive nights. He got caught that same night that he committed the second murder. There was, I guess, a roadblock
North Orem had roadblock.
Yeah, and he actually gave up without a fight. Maybe he wanted to get his hand fixed or something, I don't know. He actually was kind of turned in by his cousin, the same one that basically vouched for him when they let him out of prison, this Brenda. And you can say, well, she wasn't low, but she did what she had to do. I think she said something to the effect of, you killed someone on Monday night, you killed someone on Tuesday night, I couldn't wait till Wednesday night.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, I don't think anybody blames her. Maybe Gary blamed her for a while, but, he needed to be caught. Now, the reason this particular set, I mean, obviously murder is a big deal, but the reason this became really a famous and landmark case was we referred to it earlier, Dennis, in that there was kind of a moratorium, actually a ban on capital punishment, and Gary wanted to die. He didn't want to live in prison. He wanted to be executed. And it was so weird because there were a lot of groups that were like, no, we can't let you. We're going to appeal and appeal. He didn't want that.
Yeah, huge, huge demonstration. ACLU, came in and various, anti-capital punishment groups and demonstrations at the prison. It was huge, huge news. I had a couple of friends, same age, year older, that were on missions at that time. And they both tell me stories when they come back in France, in Ireland. They were talking about it over there.
Yeah.
And when they find out these guys are from Utah, they're going, oh, you're from Utah. You guys are killing that guy.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was world big time news.
So one of the things you told me last week when we were talking, he was executed not, what, maybe 6 months after he was convicted?
Yeah.
Which is... That didn't happen anymore.
No, it was 13 years from conviction till execution back in that at that time.
So to do it in 6 months was like, wow.
Unbelievable, unheard of, yeah.
Tell me a little bit about his mindset as you studied this. First of all, Gilmore had tried suicide a couple of different times, including once in prison when his girlfriend had smuggled in some drugs. So some people said, well, it's just state-sponsored suicide is what it is. But what do you think was going through all this with Gilmore? Was it as simple as he didn't want to live in prison?
It's hard to say. He obviously had a lot of mental problems and social life, didn't know how to do it. But he spent so much time in prison. And there was rumors that he had done other murders. In prison, had murdered another guy.
In prison?
Yeah.
Wow.
And who knows before that?
Well, you wrote in the book that he may have committed as many as four or five or more murders. Yeah. Who knows?
But I think more or less, some of them think he just wanted notoriety and whatever, but I think he realized he didn't want to live in prison, or they didn't think, he may not believe they would actually do it.
Who knows
what was going through his mind.
Interesting story about the execution. So they asked him how he wanted to be executed, and he chose firing squad.
Overhanging. That was the two options.
Which is really unusual in that states don't do that. And even in the 70s, states didn't do firing squad anymore, except Utah was one of five states, I think, in the whole USA that would still do it. And the others haven't done it. They say they will, but they haven't. Of the five firing squad executions that have taken place in the U.S. in the last 50 years, all of them were in Utah. All of them. So, it became, that's kind of what made this a really, really big story, was capital punishment being reinstituted. You know, in a lot of countries around the world, they won't do that. They still don't do that. And a lot of states in our country still, you know, won't do that. Today in the news, Joe Biden commuted the sentences of a whole bunch of guys on death row all over the country.
That's crazy.
Not all of them, by the way, which is a whole other topic we can get into later. But so this was a big deal. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a landmark. I mean, you know, it's a tough decision, you know. I mean, you're told not to kill, it's murder, but do you let people go on murdering people and do nothing about it? I don't believe that we should house them for the rest of their lives in prison for years and years if we know for certain with the science that we have now. We're pretty sure, you know, forensics, whatever, they can tell if you've done the murder. And
well, not only that, in this case, he admitted to doing it.
Exactly.
At first, he denied it, but then he was like, no, okay, you got me, I did it. And so it, not only did they have a whole bunch of evidence, but you know, including witnesses, but you have a guy that said, yeah, I did it, and I want to die, and they didn't want to let him die. It's kind of crazy.
It's hard to understand where he was coming from.
So let's talk about capital punishment for just a minute. It's obviously a political thing. It's kind of it's one of those, you know, if you're liberal, you believe that it shouldn't happen. If you're conservative, you believe it's, you know, it should happen. But the United States was at a point here where I think a lot of people that, oh, we're finally growing up and we're going to do away with that. But then the Supreme Court said, well, actually, we can do it. And Utah was at the forefront.
You know, and it's funny, you know, I did a book signings across the nation and gun shows and things.
Mm-hmm.
And people love to come up and tell me their stories. And it's amazing how many people change their stance when they've had someone close to them that has been murdered. And I have a couple of people that brought stories to me, and also one of my good friends in high school's daughter was murdered in Springville, Utah. And people change from, no, I don't think it's right, to, you know, when they're hit by this, someone close having a murder, things change in their mind.
Yeah, if you look at what that person did to the person they murdered, in Gilmore's case, he shot two guys in the head. I mean, they had no chance. There was no fighting chance. He couldn't even look him in the eyes when he did it. He shot him in the back of the head. And, to me,
Made the first one get down on his knees.
Yeah. in a bathroom of all places, and just horrific. Let's have you slip on those headphones, if you will, Dennis. We have a couple of callers that want to talk a little bit about this before we finish up our story. Okay, let's go to line one and Rhonda. Rhonda, how are you this morning?
Oh, I'm good. I was working in Las Vegas when all of this happened, and mm-hmm. I was young, and I just anyway, the name of the salon was the Electric Chair Hair Design, and the owner would put Santa Claus in an electric. The chairs were actually electric. You know, you'd press them, and they'd go up and down the hydraulic lift. Anyway, so he had he put Santa Claus on our front window every Christmas in an electric chair getting his hair cut.
So that's a little morbid.
He had a bunch of T-shirts made with that Santa in the electric chair, and he actually sent one to Gary Gilmore.
Oh, wow.
And I don't know if he communicated back, but the owner said to me, well, he thought it was funny.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if he did send him back a letter or a note or something saying, you know, he liked it or whatnot, but anyway. That was my story.
All right. Thank you, Rhonda. Appreciate that. Yeah, the electric salon.
We all have different sense of humor. Right?
All right, let's go to line two. Hey, thanks for calling in. What's on your mind this morning?
I just barely was tuning in, but I heard your guest. He said, we've been told not to kill, you know, but actually, I believe the Hebrew translation, or it wasn't translated correctly, it was actually... do not take innocent life.
That's a big difference.
Yeah.
Justification. It was kind of messed up in the translation there.
Yeah. All right. Thank you for that. I appreciate it. Appreciate you calling in. Gary Gilmore chose firing squad. Now, back when this happened, I thought this was fascinating. It's in the book, by the way, Dennis's book, Life After Execution. They actually asked for volunteers for the firing squad. They didn't have you didn't get four deputies or whatever. They actually asked for volunteers from the community for the firing squad. These guys were to be paid $100 to shoot from behind a wall so Gary couldn't see them and execute this guy. And supposedly there were going to be five guns and four of them would have a bullet and the fifth one would have a blank. Now, in retrospect, I guess Vern, his uncle, said there were actually five bullet holes, so maybe nobody had a blank.
Yeah, that's what he was telling my dad, you know, after the case, they were talking about it. He got his clothes after, and the T-shirt had five bullet holes, Vern said, in it.
Wow.
Over 100 people volunteered for the firing squad. And I actually, in some of my book signings, one gal come to me, and she said that her grandfather was on the firing squad.
Was he? He was one of them.
Now, I don't know. I tried to get an interview. He didn't want to talk about it. But in retrospect, I'm thinking perhaps they have to take some kind of an oath or sign a document.
That they can't talk about it.
Yeah. And that seems likely and fair.
It's funny. I was talking with my wife about this last night because she also read the book because, you know, we wanted to make sure we knew what we were talking about. But she kind of, would you have done that? Would you have volunteered? And I was like, you know, the guy was, it's not like he maybe didn't do it or whatever. He did it. He admitted to doing it. They asked him why he did it. He's like, I don't know. It's, you know, whatever. He didn't even have a good reason for doing it. I think I would have volunteered. I would have been one of the 100 or whatever that would have volunteered to do it.
It would take some thought.
It would. And I don't know because, you know how it is. In a situation like that, you only know when the situation actually happens. But in looking back on it, I think I would have been one of those that would have been, this guy needs to die, and I'm okay being part of it.
See, and that's part of what I said about the people where they take their stance, and they think they know how they feel about something. Mm-hmm. But until you've got someone involved or know someone, you never know how you're really going to act.
It's true.
And I don't know if I could just be on the firing squad to someone I didn't know, but this was horrendous. And if you were part of a friend, I can't believe how many people come to me around and talk about. I had a person a couple of days ago contact me, want an autographed copy of the book. His friends were cousins and sat and had the last meal with Gary Gilmore in the prison.
Wow.
I mean, the stories never end.
They asked, by the way, on that last meal, they asked Gary what he wanted. He's like, I don't know. As long as I got a couple of beers, I'm good. So we got to take a quick break. Be back more with Dennis R. Silson. Again, the book is called Life After Execution. It's about the Gary Gilmore. A lot of it's about the gun, too. And we'll talk about the gun when we get back.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU. Southern Utah's News Talk Leader.
Welcome back. 9:52 on KDXU. We are obviously short on time, but I've got Dennis Stilson here. He is the author of the book, Life After Execution, The Gilmore Gun. We'll talk for just a minute about the gun. Gary, what gun did he use in these murders? What was it?
The make? It was a Browning Challenger 2, 22 long rifle, semi-auto.
It's only a 22, huh?
Yeah.
But he shot him in the head, and even it with just a little 22, that's
They've always
enough.
Said that's the assassin's choice.
Yeah.
Because instead of blowing a hole clear through, you'll go in the skull and rattle around.
And that's, unusual, because you would think, okay, assassins are going to use a 45 or a 38 or something, but actually the 22 is the better choice.
For up close, you know.
Yeah. All right.
They say.
They say, yeah, hopefully. None of us will find out firsthand
exactly.
on that one. But okay, about the Capitol murder case. First of all, I did want to mention this. So they sat him down in this chair, put a hood over his head, and the priest did the last rites, and then they had the execution. I guess they put a little target over the heart.
Yeah.
Which I guess that makes sense, right? And he wanted to donate his organs to, to kind of donor organs, but...
Yeah, it took his eyes, his corneas, and it did take those, and what else? But.
Yeah, generally speaking, once a person has died, suddenly the body releases toxins, and they can't take something like your liver or anything like that, but they can take your eyes. And in fact, this is maybe... I don't know, weird or morbid, but there was a song made popular by a British rock band in the 70s called Gary Gilmore's Eyes.
Yeah.
And the idea, and I don't think they had any actual real perspective on this, but the idea was the song was written from the perspective of someone that was donated the eyes of the murderer.
Right. So, and the adverts. This is the band, yeah.
The adverts, yep. I actually have it. I'm not going to play it because I don't know that it's appropriate right now. Plus, we're short on time. But, Gary Gilmore's Eyes is a song.
I haven't heard that in a long time.
Yeah, it's. I could play it for you, but I'm not going to right now. Okay, some of the other fallout from this. We're getting to the point now, Dennis, in that all the parties that were part of this, you talk about the lawyers and other, they're all pretty old or maybe even passed away at this point. So is your goal with this book, one of the goals is to try to keep alive what happened here and keep it prominent in people's minds?
Well, it's once in history. I guess it probably, I'm sure there's people that were more connected to me, for sure, the family and the victims, and someone remembered, some don't. It's just strange how I had my whole life different connections with so many involved in the case.
Yeah. And we don't want to make the mistake of letting anybody think Gary Gilmore was some kind of anti-hero, some hero at all. He was a bad man. He was a bad person. He was mean. He was mean-spirited. He was a murderer. And so the goal, obviously, of your book and of this show is not to promote Gary Gilmore.
Nor the politics of the thing. I just basically try to tell the story, you know, which I think we should do about capital punishment or guns. Get your knowledge first. Make up your own mind. Go by your instincts, your research. Don't piggyback your belief off somebody else's.
Yeah. And by the way, the other thing about Gilmore, and maybe, I don't know, this was in the movie, he wasn't exactly the toughest guy. He got beat up a couple of different times by guys when he was out of prison and probably in prison, too. So it's not like he was this invincible man. He just happened to have a gun when he did what he did, and that was all awful, obviously.
Man, it's hard to wrap your head around. It is. Murdering innocent people like that.
In little Spanish Fork, Utah, too. Yeah.
And then that was a time where, like you say, we didn't lock our cars hardly ever.
Yeah.
People carried guns around in their vehicles, but we never, I don't know of anybody that abused that right.
Yeah.
Or, you know, we'd get in a fist fight occasionally, and half the time would end up the next day shaking hands and
being friends
again.
Yeah, seriously, that's how it was back in the day. And it's sad that, unfortunately, gun violence has evolved into what some of it is nowadays with gangs and things like that.
You can't blame it on the guns. I just don't believe that. More people are murdered with knives than anything, always has been.
Yeah.
And it's not the screwdriver, the gun, or the sword, or whatever, or the rock. It's the person. It's the people that do it. They use these things, but you can't blame it on the tool. It's the human being that's at fault.
I think you make in one of your chapters of your book, you make the statement that, you know, if we were going to outlaw weapons of violence, knives would be first, way before guns.
Absolutely.
Because so many people commit violent crimes with knives.
Here's a little tidbit for you. You know, people that are married, most men that are murdered in the, at home is in the bedroom, the kitchen, and more women are murdered in the bedroom just for domestic violence.
Yeah, it's as far as Gary Gilmore, again, folks, remember that this was a big case in the U.S. because we hadn't had an execution in our country for more than a decade when Gilmore basically said, go ahead and execute me. I don't want to live in prison. I want this to be over. And I thought it was so strange that all these groups, ACLU and other groups, were like, no, we can't let him die. Well, why not, you know? So
I agree.
And then the news of today with Joe Biden commuting the punishments of so many murders. I forget the 30-something murderers nationwide. Their sentences have been commuted from death to life in prison. And the weird thing, he left four or five high-profile cases. He left those on death row.
Yeah, kind of double standards there, isn't it?
Hypocrisy. So.
What do you really believe?
The book, again, is Life After Execution by Dennis R. Stilson. The Gilmore Gun is a subtitle, and I highly recommend it. It's a good read. It's very interesting stuff. Dennis, thanks for coming on today. And I'm sorry you had to be a part of the whole Gilmore thing, but I'm glad you've at least been able to tell your story.
Well, thank you. Glad to be here.
We will. That'll do it for today. I'll be here tomorrow, maybe Mello too. And then I am off Christmas Day till the day after New Year's. But thanks, folks, for listening. Thanks, Dennis, for coming on.
Thank you.
And that'll do it for the Andy Griffin Show. Thanks for listening.
Save big this holiday season. All in the Kroger app. Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit two, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.